back in session. The next item on the agenda, thank you, is a continued discussion of the Healthy Kids Survey. Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we talked about the last meeting, this purpose of this meeting is to seek further input as it talked about the Healthy Kids Survey. We do have two staff members here to make a brief presentation and answer any questions. You also asked for some additional questions that we've included in your packet. So Rebecca, if you just talk briefly and answer any questions, and then at that point we've got people here who want to talk.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
We've provided you all with a revised fact sheet, and since we last spoke, we've shared the past instruments and the administration timeline. The
Pull details, it up just a little bit more.
I'm sorry. Details of the timeline have been added to this fact sheet as well. The fact sheet discusses the privacy, the past interpretation, as well as the IRB process with the University of Colorado at Denver. I think rather than a lengthy presentation, we're happy to just take any remaining questions that you all have, and then as the commissioner mentioned, I know we have about 20 people here for public comment.
Madam Chair?
Yes, I'm sorry, Ms. County.
Districts, say parents are notified of this survey, and how are they notified? Do you know?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
So district policy and the local decisions around that policy govern whether or not a district uses opt-in or opt-out. And we have, you know, the steering committee has advised districts to give plenty of notification to make the survey available to them. But ultimately, that decision about notification and opt-in and opt-out procedures is made based on local district school boards.
Right. But are you aware of or do you have any information about when districts do provide the information about the survey to parents, whether it's opt-in or opt-out? Do you know anything about how they provide information on the survey?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
With the great number of districts that are surveyed, you'd see a great variety of process, and we don't have exact data on the variety of those processes.
Okay. I guess, and Pam probably asked, and I was fumbling around here, so I may be asking the same question you did. Because I heard you say districts might opt in or opt out. Was that a choice that districts could make the decision to whether they wanted to have people opt in or out, or was there a regular, a different decision as to how they got the notice?
Sure. So districts themselves can opt in or opt out of the survey. And as you see in the fact sheet,
okay,
in the 2013 administration, about 13 districts that were asked if they wanted to be surveyed indicated they did not want the survey at any school in their district. So they have an opt-in, opt-out provision at that level. And then the past question was to how districts might inform their parents of the parent right to either opt in or opt out based on local board policy.
And the answer to that second question?
It's determined by local board policy whether or not they use
board
opt in or opt out procedures. Yeah.
Any other questions? I understand there are members of the public here who would like to testify. Unless there is an objection, I will take public comment out of order on the Healthy Kids Survey only. If you're signed up, we only want to hear about healthy kids. You can do the other later. If you've signed up for public comment on the Healthy Kids Survey, I will call your name and come to the podium to address the board. As usual, each person will have 3 minutes. Please adhere to that time limit. Carrie Markle over there will ring a bell or wave a sign or something for your 3 minutes. Finish the sentence that you're in and then and stop. And if you don't, we'll ask you to stop. Very important that we stick to this 3 minute. We have, I think, 15 or so people signed up, which means we're going to be spending about 45 minutes with public comment. So it's really important to stick to that. I will name the first three people, and then I'll kind of try so that if you know you're up next, if you'd be ready to get up and speak as soon as the person ahead of you finishes. The very first person will be Dr. Larry Walk, followed by John Simmons and Dr. Edwin Asturias. All right. Dr. Walk, if you'd like to begin, we're ready to go.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the board for allowing me to come speak to you. I am open to answering any questions as really the primary source of information for anything as it relates to the Healthy Kids Colorado survey. I do want to reiterate what are the facts about the survey, just to make sure that everybody is on the same page. This is, in fact, a voluntary, anonymous survey that provides our state with vital information about the health and well-being of our middle and high school students. I say it's a fact with regard to voluntary from our perspective. I know that there was an informal legal opinion provided to the board, but at this particular time, my understanding is that the legal determination is indeterminate, and I would hope that the board wouldn't make any decisions with regard to legal considerations as a result of the indeterminate analysis of whether or not it should be considered voluntary or not. We need this data from a health standpoint. I think people are saying, well, there are other sources of data like sheriff's departments and hospitals. Well, sheriff's departments collect data on arrests, and hospitals collect information on why kids come to the emergency room, whether it's related to marijuana, whether it's related to bullying or suicide attempts, or unfortunately deaths as it results in suicide. So if you want us to make policy decisions through the Department of Public Health and as a state based on these unfortunate end results, then you're crippling our efforts if you do anything to change the way the current Healthy Kids Colorado survey is currently administered, so that we can ask questions. Students can choose not to answer questions, not to participate in the survey. Parents can opt their students out. Teachers can opt out. Schools can opt out. School districts can opt out. They can also choose to require parents to actively opt their student in. So I do want to make sure that you understand all of the facts and all of the clarifications with regard to that. The last thing I would say to emphasize my last point is that we believe that this is a local decision for schools and school districts and parents that reside and send their kids to these schools. And so the current policy does support that local decision-making process without requiring something that some districts, some parents, and some schools might not agree with. I thank you for the opportunity, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. Walker.
Thank you.
John Simmons.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Board, for this opportunity to speak. I am the Executive Director of Student Services for Denver Public Schools. DPS values and relies upon the Healthy Kids Colorado survey data. It provides Denver Public Schools with a reliable way to understand how students feel, the choices they're making, and how this impacts their success in school. This data gives us important insight into the collective student experience so that we can better work to meet student needs. Specifically, we use the data in three ways. Number one, to better understand health behaviors and attitudes among Denver youth. Important focus of the Healthy Kids survey is social and emotional health of students. This focus helps DPS understand important factors such as bullying, mental health, and social supports experienced by students. Number two, we support new programs and policies at the school and community level. We rely on the Healthy Kids survey data to support the Denver Plan 2020's goal of support for the whole child. Reliable data is critical to ensuring that programs are targeted to impact students in the most effective way. And number three, we monitor trends in health behaviors over time. The world that DPS students live in is changing rapidly. Healthy Kids data allows DPS to look at student behavioral trends over time to see how environmental changes, such as the legalization of recreational marijuana, are impacting student perceptions and choices. We value the local control that's resident in the current opt-out construct structure. As a school district serving more than 90,000 students through 190 schools, we rely upon our school principals and school-level leadership to understand the students and parent communities they serve and determine how best to communicate with these communities. Requiring active parental consent would place a significant administrative and cost burden on schools and may jeopardize the reliability of the data. It is estimated that active consent would cost an additional $20 per student as compared to passive consent. From a resource utilization and management perspective, this presents a financial and resource burden to Denver Public Schools. Additionally, the idea of investing resources in administering a survey without the guarantee of reliable data is very concerning. We ask that you maintain the current process of the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey consent to help us ensure our efforts to meet student needs. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Be followed by Dr. Edwin Ostrius, and he will be followed by Katrina Calden-Ruggles, Nora Brooks, and Leslie Del Rio.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members of the board. My name is Edwin Asturias, and I'm a Denver resident and a father of actually two kids in high school in the Denver Public Schools. I'm also an associate professor of pediatrics at Children's Hospital of Colorado, and I work in global health and other endeavors. I'm here as a, you know, representing Children's Hospital, the institution, but also I'm here as a parent. And I can tell you the Colorado Healthy Kids Survey for me is a very important tool to know how kids are trending in terms of health in Colorado. As you heard already this afternoon, the survey that we are administering is voluntary, and we can decline that survey either at the level of the district, the school, or any parent or child that don't want to take the survey. And I don't think in any way this survey violates my parental or my children's right to opt out of the process. But as you know, the other day I asked my daughter what will happen if she were to bring a consent form for me to allow her to take the survey. And what she said is, you know, most of us actually will forget to leave that form either at school or in my backpack. And I said, that's very interesting because my daughter is right. If we go into an opt-in survey, then we will prevent a lot of these kids to answering these questions correctly. In fact, a lot of our research shows that in states where we have allowed the active consent to be implemented, the dropout of participation has gone from 80% to almost 40%. So a 40% dropout in the participation of kids in this. And the most important thing is not who are we dropping out. It's the issue that in the states where the consents are being administered, most of the kids that answer these surveys are girls that come from a double parent household that are highly educated. So we're leaving out the most vulnerable kids, the ones actually are benefiting from the programs that we are trying to institute. So in many ways, I think as a parent, I want to know what are the trends of marijuana use. I want to know what are the risk behaviors that my kids are having in school, because then I can have the proper conversations with them at home. That way I can talk to my daughter about, you know, if the trend of drug use is going up, I want to be able to tell her that, and I will be able to sort of have a discussion and a conversation with appropriate data. We at Children's Hospital of Colorado relied on this survey in a number of departments and clinics. In an adolescent clinic, for example, we use it to foster the programs and the community programs that we have that are making a difference. As if we mandate the parents to sign an active consent of this anonymous and voluntary survey, we will be trading its high quality, and we will be turning into a biased data of information. And we wouldn't be able to fully trust the data that we're collecting from our community and from children. Public health and public safety share a lot of things. And one of the most important things that they share is that good data drives good action.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Katrina?
My name is Katrina Ruggles. I am a counselor at the Center Consolidated School District in Center, Colorado. Our school has a 91% free and reduced lunch rate, second highest in the state. We have a very high at-risk population, and I think you've heard from us before about how important funding is for an at-risk population. We have been instituting the Healthy Kids Colorado survey since 2005 annually, and we've used this data to literally go after hundreds of thousands of dollars in grant money to address the issues that our students face every day. I've provided you with some of that data because we track it over time. First of all, we're not afraid of our data. We're not afraid of knowledge. And we believe that this information can help us to create better programs to make sure that we're filling in the gaps and that we're addressing the needs of our students. And we also use it to monitor how are we doing. If you look at our data, Healthy Kids, if you look at the ATOD data, substance abuse data, initially we noticed we have a high rate of youth. We've got to institute research-based programs. We did that, and you can see our general decline, which, by the way, I've done statistical regression analysis on, and a statistically significant drop. In addition, if you turn the page, if you look at the mental health data, we noticed we had a spike. We got several people are trained to be assist. We trained our staff to in the youth mental health first aid, and you can see the drop there. We also started doing a universal screening, which is an active consent, to make sure we're identifying students who then needed to have support. I had students research the fruit and vegetable consumption. They said, we need better fruits and vegetables here. So we worked with Live Well Colorado for our cafeteria. On the last page, you see the parental data, and I had students look at this data, and they said, Miss, you know why we're using drugs and we're engaging in sex? It's because we don't have good parental support. Look at that. Only about 60% of kids say they have parental support. We started doing a monthly parent education night, boosting up our parent engagement efforts, getting them on leadership opportunities, and you can see the increase in parental supports that students report. Our sexual health data, we looked at that data, and in according to the CDPHE, in 2004, 53.6% per 53.6 per 1,000 was our fertility rate. Last year, we were at 25.8. We used the data that said our kids were sexually active. We instituted programs to address that. If you require that we do active consent, I'm a master's level counselor. I'm going to spend my time collecting surveys or permission rather than working directly with students, which is where I want to be. It's going to skew the data to the kids that are, you know, most likely to get the survey back, the kids who can't remember it in their backpack, the kids whose parents say, I'll get to that later. We won't hear from them. So you're going to silence the voice of our students because we use their voice to create programs and to address the needs of our students. So the last thing I'd say that we'll lose the normative data as well that we use to compare to the rest of the state. So I thank you for your time. If you have any questions, I'll answer those.
Nora? Oh, thank you. I'm sorry. Nora.
Hi, thank you. My name is Nora Brooks, and I'm the parent of three public school children. And I am here to support not changing anything about the way this data is collected, especially in the environment we now have in Colorado with drug use going up due to recreational marijuana. We need to understand the trends so that we can provide the programs and support we need for the children. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be followed by Leslie Del Rio, Henry Leslie, and Scott Romero. Leslie?
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Leslie Del Rio. I am a former graduate of DPS, Florence Crittenden High School, which is a high school for pregnant and parenting teen moms. I have a child. He is 4 years old, so I'm going to come at this with a couple of lenses. I am here, like other people are saying, to support that nothing changes with the Healthy Kids Colorado survey. I have taken the survey. I never felt pressure to, and I felt like all my answers were anonymous. And this helped create a change. I was the at-risk youth that you guys are talking about that these programs helped change. And if it wasn't for this, my peers at the high school and my colleagues now that I work there have changed. You know, we've seen a decline in teen pregnancy because of this data. You know, we've seen that having, you know, these programs in place, we wouldn't have targeted that, you know, that those youth at risk if it wasn't for this data. So I would say to keep it in place like it is, parents need to know what their kids are doing. And as a mother, I would like to know if my child is at risk for using marijuana. This is, Colorado is changing so rapidly, like our education system. So we need to grow with it, and we need to keep this the same because we need to know what kids are doing, and we need to know how to change it. And as a young person, I feel like it's important. I feel like my voice should be heard, and there is no safe place to do it. I wouldn't have answered the questions honestly if I had to say it to a counselor or if I had to ask my mom permission to do this survey. And that's the honest truth, because my mom would have asked, why are they asking you about sex? Why are they asking you about marijuana use? Are you doing it? I wouldn't have answered it, and my mom would probably have opted me out. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Henry? Henry? Henny, I'm sorry.
I know, it's usually surprising. My name is Henny Lastly. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the board. I am a Colorado resident and the mom of three graduates of our local public school system. I also happen to have two buffs and a ram. I'm here today as a parent and also as a co-founder of Smart Colorado. As you know, in 2012, Colorado voters amended our state constitution allowing for adult use and retail sale of recreational marijuana on top of an already commercialized model for medical marijuana. When the governor formed the task force to set up the regulatory structure to govern retail, the task force prioritized their objectives. The public health and safety of Colorado kids ranked dead last on the priorities of the task force. A group of parents quickly realized that the most important voice, that of Colorado kids, had been silenced. We could not sit by and let this happen. We are an all-volunteer-led, nonpartisan organization made up of several thousand members interested in only one thing, raising awareness and educating Colorado youth, parents, educators, business leaders, political leaders, and about the impact of on Colorado youth of the commercialized marijuana market. As you all know, the world is watching, but SMART focuses on the eyes of Colorado youth looking back at the adults of this state, looking for guidance on how to navigate this new landscape. Here are a few facts for you to consider, and these were all taken, of course, before retail became legal. 36.9% of our high school students had tried marijuana more than one time. 86.4% of those think that their parents would think this was very wrong for the student to use marijuana. And 8% had tried marijuana before the age of 13. 36% know someone with a medical marijuana card. And in the first 4 months of the commercialized retail market, we saw a 46% increase in the number of medical marijuana cards issued between those between 18 and up to the age of 21. Nearly 1 in 4 of our high school seniors report using marijuana in the past 30 days. Did you know that there has been an explosion of nearly 300 food products infused with marijuana concentrates for sale, including candy, cookies, baked goods, and pasta sauce? Did you know that marijuana can be concealed and vaporized in methods that now look like a highlighter or an asthma inhaler? I understand how important and complicated this discussion is for you today. I get it. As a parent, I appreciated the opportunity to have a choice about things directly impacting my children when they went to school every day. The information from our school to make a decision was what mattered to me, not whether or not I had to go the extra step to opt in or opt out. The unique circumstance facing our kids regarding marijuana and the consistent method of data collection is especially critical today. How else can we better know where our youth need leadership? SMART believes this is an important point for our youth as they attempt to navigate this uncharted landscape. This is about collecting information consistently and considering that what is best for the common
yes,
and public
ma'am.
Good.
Thank you.
Please do not change the method. Thank you.
Thank you. Scott.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Board, distinguished guests. My name is Scott Romero, and I work with the Denver Public Schools Healthy Schools team, and I have the privilege to work with some of the best principals in the state of Colorado. Healthy Kids Colorado survey data is used by schools to inform program planning for student services and to help schools understand how to best serve students. School staffs use data to provide programming both during the school day and after school. These data inform the management of resources, including staffing for nurses, social workers, teachers, and school counselors, as well as our valued partners in the community. Without the type of information that the Healthy Kids survey provides, the district and school leaders would be blindly making decisions in the absence of understanding the experiences our students face. Placebridge Academy serves 1,100 students through the ages of early childhood and eighth grade. It's the first school in Colorado to incorporate Healthy Kids Colorado measures into the Unified Improvement Plan for the Colorado Department of Education. Principal Brenda Kazin and her staff use these measures to maximize school-based health center reach and provide an extensive list of student support services for whole child well-being. Local school level control allows principals to determine the best communication strategies with their parents. With the current consent structure, school principals and leaders can use a variety of methods to communicate with parents, such as automated calls, website postings, or information can be sent home with students based on the community communication strategies that they've found to be effective in schools. Typically, parents are faced with a significant amount of paper communication from schools. The communication procedures afforded by the current opt-out structure can minimize the paperwork burden by parents and allow for alternative communication practices. Requiring active consent would make it less likely that schools and partners could obtain representative data for health. We rely on Healthy Kids Colorado survey data for policy development, program planning, resource allocation, and program evaluation. With the current consent structure, our schools determine whether they will participate in the survey. Our schools understand the needs and concerns of parents in their communities and base their decision in this knowledge. Research shows that student response rates are much lower with active consent, and this could jeopardize the ability to obtain data that are truly representative of Denver youth. DPS, Denver Public Schools, asks that you maintain the current process of the Healthy Kids Colorado survey to help ensure our efforts meet the needs of our communities and ultimately our families and students. Thank you.
Thank you. You must have timed that. The next one is Yashana, and followed by Nicole and Cindy. Yashana?
Hello, everyone. My name is Yashna Swarin. I'm 18 years old, and I'm a senior at Cherry Creek High School. I'm here today for all the youth that couldn't be here because they are in school, because our systems right now aren't set up to support the youth voice. I've experienced firsthand how the Healthy Kids Colorado survey is absolutely essential in supporting Colorado's youth. I understand that there are serious concerns regarding the survey, and I would like to talk to you about a few of those today. The questions on the Healthy Kids Colorado survey have been said to be too personal or mature. But the matter of the fact is that these surveys are completely anonymous and the questions are appropriate. There is no identifying information taken from students and the survey is completely voluntary. If a youth truly feels uncomfortable, they hold the power to opt out. But the questions in this survey aren't at all graphic or suggestive. In fact, the Healthy Kids Colorado survey has utilized youth input in the creation of the survey and the wording of the questions. I've been a part of the Youth Partnership for Health, an advisory council comprised of diverse Colorado youth, for 5 years. And I've interacted with the survey throughout these 5 years, ensuring the questions on the survey are appropriate and understandable. The Healthy Kids Colorado survey has taken initiative to ensure that they are responsive to youth culture, ensuring the questions are within reason. The aim of the survey is to collect data to keep youth healthy, and that's exactly what it does through these carefully selected questions. By making the survey an opt-in survey, we put the data and the success of the survey at great risk. Let me tell you, as a high schooler, any reason to not take a survey or a test is a good one. So without the data, the conclusions made from the survey will not be accurate. I understand the concerns that have been raised surrounding the survey. However, I don't think increasing barriers around the survey is the solution. Instead, educate parents and youth about the importance of this survey and explain some of the content. If students or parents are uncomfortable with the survey, allow an opt-out option. I'm sure I don't have to convince you of the fact that we must invest in today's youth. What I will say is that to effectively invest in today's youth, we need the data. Adults need to understand us, how the systems in place affect us, and what supports are present, what risks we're facing, and how to help us conquer these challenges. The Healthy Kids Colorado survey identifies exactly these things. As a youth, I've seen firsthand what drives my peers to participate in risky behaviors. I've seen what pushes a high schooler to start drinking or smoking. I've seen smart, ambitious, talented peers lose themselves in drug addictions. I've seen youth succeed outstandingly, and I've seen youth falter without the correct supports. This is preventable. The problem is, not many legislators and program directors truly understand the experience of our youth, nor have the opportunity to see what it's like to be a youth these days. This survey allows adults a window into the world of youth. It's a way for youth to communicate their experiences to help adults understand what key issues are facing today's youth are. Thank you very much.
Nicole Croy. Cindy Kanagwa, I believe. Am I close?
Hi.
Cindy, thank you.
Hi, Madam Chair and Board. Thank you. My name is Cindy Kernaghi. I'm the health data specialist for Well County Department of Public Health and Environment. I have extensive training and experience in conducting surveys, and I oversee data and evaluation activities at the health department. I am also a member of the statewide Healthy Kids Colorado Survey Advisory Committee. Since 1993, we have been successfully working with 12 school districts to voluntarily administer the Youth Risk Behavior Survey or the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey, with each school district's preferred parental consent method. All districts have, volunteered to participate on one or more occasions over the years. And I can tell you very briefly, to answer your question, that the method that we've notified has changed over the years, from mailing letters home to emails to backpacks with students to back-to-school nights when parents are there. I have 3 points to make today. My first point concerns why the survey is important. The survey provides invaluable longitudinal data that helps us understand the healthy and not so healthy behaviors of our children. The survey is the only population-based source of information about adolescent health and well-being that is available locally. As a community, we need to be as well informed as we can be. My second point concerns how we currently use the data in Weld County. Over the past 22 years, we've used these data to track on the ongoing health status of our communities, like we have done in this report here, and I can leave copies with your attendant. We use it strategically to prioritize programming, given that our public health resources are limited. For example, we use it to direct our activities in our healthy dating and relationship program for adolescents called Weld Weights. Without these data, there is less impetus to do a program like Weld Weights. Without an accurate picture of adolescent sexual behavior, Weld Weights may not have been initiated in our county. By changing social norms around sexual behavior for youth, Weld Weights is equipping those teens with refusal skills to make healthier choices. Local public health agencies across the entire state use these data in the way that we do in Weld County to help their schools and communities understand youth behaviors. My third and final point concerns the potential impact of changing the consent procedures. Our ability to understand adolescent health behaviors will be negatively affected because participation rates will go down. Rates go down and results quickly lose their usefulness. Furthermore, requiring active consent will introduce more bias because studies have shown that the majority of children who do not participate in mandatory active consent environments are more often less educated.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Karen X, followed by Karina Delaney and Seth Knoll.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Neal, and members of the board. My name is Karen Axe, and I'm the proud parent of a transgender child, Shannon, who is at school in Horizons in Boulder, Boulder, Colorado.
A little closer to the mic.
She's in school in Boulder at Horizons. I'm also the founder of Trans Youth Education and Support of Colorado, which is a part of PFLAG. We've assisted over 200 families in Colorado with transgender and gender expansive youth since our inception several years ago. As a parent of a transgender child, every day when I drop off my child at school, I'm reminded of the horrifying results from the 2013 Healthy Kids Colorado survey that shows that students like Shannon are at least two times more likely to be bullied and 6 times more likely to attempt suicide than her peers. These statistics are far too real for me. 8 years ago, our family made a difficult decision to allow our second grader to transition from male to female to save her life. Now that she's thriving and happy and successful in school, we know that that was the right decision for her. The greatest challenge we faced was a school district that was unprepared to keep her safe at school. As a result, my child was socially isolated, bullied, and failing in school. She threatened suicide at age 9. We were forced to move to a school district that had necessary services for Shannon, with the opportunity to learn and mature like any other kid.
As a parent, especially a parent of a child who experiences more bullying than others, I know the importance of the Healthy Kids Colorado survey and how my school uses that data to make the school climate safer, not just for Shannon, but for all kids. Without this data, students like Shannon fall through the gaps. This survey is vital to our families. We want to be sure the next generation of parents are able to make more informed decisions for their children. This is the first time I've ever given public testimony. It's because I've been living in fear for far too long. Parents like me enthusiastically support our children participating in this survey. The Healthy Kids Colorado survey provides the opportunity for schools to learn how best to serve students so they will not have to endure the bullying and suicide risk that Shannon did before we moved her to a safe school. That safety translates to higher confidence, higher grades, and higher ambitions. After I drop my child off each morning, I find comfort in knowing that Shannon's school is doing everything they can to support my child. I know this is a direct result of our school using Healthy Kids Colorado data to address the issue of bullying in her school and to keep her safe. Members of the board, I ask you to think about Shannon when casting your vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Lee Yetter? Lee? No Lee? Oh.
Thank you, Madam Chair and board members. My name is Leo Katari, and I'm the health policy manager for One Colorado, the state's leading advocacy group for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Coloradans and their families. And I'm here to speak to the importance of maintaining the current collection process for the Healthy Kids Colorado survey. And I would also like to let the board members know that, to my understanding, there is another legal opinion available through CDPHE about this topic. As an organization that works to ensure all young Coloradans have access to schools where they can learn and thrive, we rely on the Healthy Kids Colorado survey to help us identify and support schools and districts that need assistance in providing safe and inclusive environments for all students. We assist schools in updating school and district policies around bullying and discrimination to align with state law. We also help LGBT students become leaders in their communities through participation in student government. And we also work with teachers and school staff and students as well to address bullying at all levels. This all contributes to a more positive school climate and translates to students who can thrive academically, participate in extracurricular activities safely, and positively contribute to their local communities. According to the 2013 Healthy Colorado Kids Survey, lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth are twice as likely to be bullied, three times more likely to smoke cigarettes, and six times more likely to attempt suicide. No other state-administered survey collects this kind of data on LGBT youth. And no other survey can demonstrate these staggering statistics about the experiences of LGBT students in Colorado. And this is not because of their sexual orientation or gender identity, but this is because of the daily experiences of stigma and bias that young LGBT students experience on a daily basis in school, at home, and in their local community. Changing how this survey is administered will do a disservice to Colorado youth, but especially to those who are most marginalized, like LGBT youth, young people of color, and young people with disabilities. I ask you to demonstrate your commitment to ensuring all young people in Colorado have the opportunity to live their lives open and honestly and with the health and happiness we all deserve as Coloradans. So please, I ask you, when you're thinking about your vote, to think about these young people and make no changes to the Healthy Colorado School Survey. Thank you very much.
Karina Delaney.
Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Karina Delaney, and I'm the Whole Child Initiatives Coordinator with the Adams 12 School District. And I'm lucky enough, like many others in the room, to work in a district where we collect and use health data to guide our work in order to meet the growing needs of our students. You see, in the last 13 years, our free and reduced 5 years. So we know that our students are encountering health barriers and that the student health data helps guide us in identifying and reducing these barriers in order to increase student success. The Adamsville 5-0 schools recognize that a child's physical, emotional, social, and mental health directly affects his or her capacity to learn. We know that students need to have strong, healthy foundations in order to engage in the quality instruction that our teachers provide every day. Unfortunately, what we are finding is that more and more is that our students are coming to school with weak and sometimes broken foundations, and this is creating a huge barrier to our students succeeding. The way we look at it is that some of our students come to school with a solid health foundation, a springboard, if you will, that they use to jump into classroom instruction, programming, and appropriate social interactions with peers and adults. Other students encounter health barriers, many before they even come to school. And these students have cracks and holes in their foundation, and at many times trip over these cracks and fall in these holes, creating a barrier to them engaging in classroom instruction, programming, and appropriate social interactions with their peers and adults. In Adams 12, we use the Healthy Kids Colorado survey data to fill in these cracks and holes in order to create a solid, healthy foundation for all of the students in Adams 12. Adams 12 has developed a district health advisory committee comprised of parents, community members, and district personnel to look at district and county level data in order to help us attain competitive health and wellness grants, as well as decide how to align resources and energy with our district's top health priorities. We can only continue this work with good, reliable data. We need to protect the Healthy Kids Colorado survey and the current administration model to preserve the integrity of the data and ensure we continue to get information that is useful to the important work we are doing to help set our students up for success.
Thank you. Seth Noel. Followed by Lori and Dr. Sarah Nichols. Yes, Seth, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Board, thank you so much for having me. I am a member of Colorado Youth Matters Youth Council, CREATE, whose role is to advocate for youth sexual health across Colorado. I'm 20 years old, and I currently attend Colorado State University in Fort Collins. And my hometown is Colorado Springs, Colorado, where I attended Air Academy High School, and I also attended Rampart High School, which is the school from which I graduated. I switched high schools because of oppressive experiences at my first high schools, and if I hadn't switched schools, I would not be standing here in front of you today. This issue is important to me because it's important to keep the survey as open and accessible as possible, or students like me will fall through the cracks, and I'll go into more on that later. I did not personally complete the survey in Colorado Springs, but many of my peers across Colorado did, and we all understand that the survey is voluntary and that no one was forced to complete the questionnaire. Were my parents asked to consent to me taking the survey, I most likely would not have had the opportunity to take it. And I think this experience would ring true for other GLBT students across Colorado. The council uses this data from the Healthy Kids Colorado survey to understand health behaviors of Colorado youth, especially risk behaviors such as suicide, drug abuse, risky sexual behaviors, bullying, and others. We're really interested in learning how all of these behaviors are or might be connected. We know that young people live lives that are more complex than any one behavior or identity they might do or have, and we work to recognize this intersectionality. The data helps inform meaningful programming. It tells us what youth are doing that's more risky. For example, 64% of youth reported using a condom the last time they had sex, which decreased from 71% in 2011. We also learned that GLB-identified students were more likely to attempt suicide and less likely to have someone to go to for help than their hetero-identified peers, and that statistic is exactly true from my experience as a youth. These are issues that we're working hard to address through programming such as Youth Action Day, school-based organizing, and youth and adult partnerships, along with others. Before college, I experienced no resources concerning my sexual health and my overall health and well-being as a GLBT student, except for national ones such as the Trevor Project. Even by having access to taking this survey, I would have felt more included and that someone in Colorado actually cared about my future, my survival, and my ability to prosper in a time where I did not see a future, I did not see survival, and I did not see an ability to prosper. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Lori?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, board members, and distinguished guests. My name is Lori Odom. I'm a retired physician, a parent, a grandparent, and today I'm speaking on behalf of the Colorado PTA. This is an organization which has approximately 24,000 members in the state of Colorado and is the state's original and largest parent engagement group, advocating that all students be given the opportunity to achieve their full potentials. Our organization is strongly supportive of obtaining ongoing, accurate, and truly representative social, emotional, behavioral, and health information about our adolescent students. We submit to you that the anonymous Healthy Kids Colorado survey with a passive or opt-out consent process is the best way to obtain that information. Our youth face ever-increasing challenges to fulfilling their potentials, significant mental health issues, feeling hopeless, being victims of bullying, attempting suicide. Colorado has one of the highest adolescent suicide rates in the nation. Poor nutrition, lack of adequate physical exercise, which contribute to poor school performance, and one of the fastest rising rates of obesity in the nation. Teen pregnancies, unsafe sexual behaviors, and increasing teen and preteen use of mind-altering prescription and non-prescription drugs, some of which are made more available than ever by the growing numbers of marijuana-infused edibles and devices that vaporize nicotine and marijuana, giving exposure to much higher doses of these drugs than any time in the past, and allowing students to discreetly use these products while at school, sometimes while in class. Although Colorado PTA believes that an opt-out consent option for the survey yields the most representative and reliable data, our organization thinks that districts and schools should be able to determine for themselves how they engage their parents in a survey that they decide to administer. Requiring all schools to use an opt-in consent would place a significant financial and staff burden on the schools and would prevent some schools from participating in the survey. Research does show that an active consent process results in a less representative sample, as many hard-to-reach subgroups, including groups at high risk of substance use and other problem behaviors, are underrepresented in opt-in consent surveys. Accurate and representative data provided by the survey is an invaluable resource for cost-effective and programmatic decisions and allocation of precious resources. Additionally, the survey data enables funders to efficiently and effectively prioritize projects for funding that meet the most important needs of the students. In many ways, our youth are crying out to be heard, and providing this platform for them to voluntarily and anonymously report the increasing obstacles and challenges facing them can itself be empowering. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And last but not least, Dr. Sarah Nichols.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and board members. My name is Sarah Nichols, and I provide strategic oversight for the Healthy Kids Colorado Survey at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. Today, you've heard from student leaders, parents and parent groups, physicians, school administrators, school wellness experts, public health officials, nonprofit organizations, and others from across the state. Each has emphasized the value of representative Healthy Kids Colorado survey data, and each has expressed their strong public support for allowing schools and districts to decide what parental consent process will work best in their communities. Additionally, partners across the state shared examples of how they use the data and why requiring parents to opt in their students to the survey would jeopardize our ability to get representative data. The examples that I just referenced and have been shared from people across the state are in the blue folders on your desk. Speaking from my role as the survey lead at CDPHE, I'm very familiar with the day-to-day details of the survey, and as such, I wanted to provide some additional information about some of the specific details that may be a question to you. First, as you've heard from others today, I want to emphasize the Healthy Kids Colorado survey is completely voluntary and anonymous. This is clearly communicated through our official documents to superintendents, principals, teachers, parents, and students. At every level, there is an opportunity to decline participation. No matter whether active or passive parental consent is used, schools provide written information about the purpose and content of the survey to parents in advance, and parents have the option to decline their child's participation in the survey. Parents are also given a link to our website where they can get access to all of the survey instruments, some frequently asked question documents specifically for parents, and can talk directly with people involved with the survey if they so wish. At the point of survey administration, the process is designed to ensure that student participation is also voluntary and anonymous. The school's survey coordinator and classroom teachers sign a confidentiality statement, agreeing they understand that participation is voluntary and a student's choice to participate and their responses to the survey are completely confidential. On the day the survey is administered, students are asked not to put their name on the survey. It collects no identifying information. And teachers read a script to students in the classroom that describes what the purpose of the survey is, emphasizes that participation is voluntary and will not affect their grade in class, and informs them that if they choose to participate, they can skip any question they don't wish to answer. Teachers are also asked not to walk around the classroom, just to, as another step to protect the anonymity of student answers. At the end of the class, students place their surveys, whether they filled them out or they're blank, in an envelope, and the teacher seals the envelope in front of the students in the classroom. That envelope is then sent to our data aggregators who analyze the data, and once the data are analyzed, all reports include aggregate results only. Individual results are never released. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes our public presentation. And I have to say I don't recall having sat through a session where, number one, one voice, and such impassioned, reasonable, sensible arguments. It was really a pleasant experience. Thank you. Well, I was not there. But thank you all for your participation and for your polite reception of one another. I appreciate that. Pam?
Madam Chair, given that we only have one voice here,
One voice.
One side of the argument.
Oh, so
I would like to read at least one letter from a parent that said, "Dear members of the State Board of Education, I'm writing regarding a story I read in Chalkbeat about the Healthy Kids Colorado survey. After seeing the story, I was directed to the survey links. As a parent, I was unaware of this survey. And now that I am, I have enormous concerns. As a bit of background, I am a very involved mom and have studied changes in education over the past 100 years or so. There has been a steady progression of education encroaching further and further into parents' rights and responsibilities. Along with that encroachment, parents have steadily given up control over many aspects of parenting. Fault lies both with the state and with parents. This survey is a perfect example. I am stunned by the questions they ask, from detailed questions about sexual activity to when they last ate a vegetable. What are they doing with this information, and why on earth would parents want their kids taking the survey? Do we think for 1 minute that they care more for our children than we do? And if they are not eating enough vegetables, so what?" Then the article on check, sorry, not so what, then what? Everybody agrees on the so what. But from the article on Chalkbeat, it appears the question is whether parents should have to opt out of the survey or whether they should be able to opt in. I am going to take it one giant step beyond. I don't think it should be opt out or opt in. I do not think this survey should ever make its way to our children through the public school system, period. We parents need to take our job back. We need to say no to the state and take responsibility for caring for our children. We know and love them better than anyone else. I think there is sometimes a chicken and egg problem. The state feels they need to jump in and take care of kids who are not being cared for at home. But why are they not being cared for at home? Could it be perhaps because parents know the state will do it for them? Sadly, I see many examples of lazy parenting. So maybe it's time for the state to give the message to lazy parents that they need to do their job. As a parent, I have the right and the responsibility to raise my children with my values, whatever they might be. I have the right and the responsibility to hold my children accountable for bad behavior. I do not believe that the answers to any of these survey questions, anonymous or not, are any business of the state of Colorado. I implore you to just say no. Stop this survey from being distributed through our schools. Thank you for your time and consideration, and thank you for your service.
Yep.
Thank you. Yes, and I would just say that I've heard from numerous parents since this survey surfaced, which really only surfaced because parents brought it to my attention. I regret that I didn't know about it before it was released in detail as far as the content. But the parents I've talked to, and there have been many, just talked to a group the other night, either don't know about this survey, or if they do know about it and have looked at the questions, they don't want this data out there on their students. They don't trust the privacy of the data. They feel the data serves the needs of the adults, not the children. They feel the data, and which is true, I believe, are tied to grant money, and parents have no oversight of grants that are tied to these data and the perspectives they represent as they seek to address at-risk behavior. And so I think that there are major problems with this survey in terms of its content, in terms of the way it's depicted to parents, the casual language that precedes the survey itself. And while we can say that it's not mandatory and that parents can opt their kids out, most of them don't know enough about it to opt them out, and most kids are not in a position to stand up and say, I'm not taking the survey. And if you look at the casual language that introduces it, it's very unlikely that it's a parent or a student would opt out. I would say that the data is not serving the needs of the kids. It's serving the needs of the adults. And when we see, why would parents trust adults in these situations when it's the adults that fostered the conditions for money pouring into this state to support the legalizing of retail marijuana sales, and now adults are somehow going to fix the problem. I mean, if parents want to depend on their value system, on working with their kids around at-risk behaviors, if there are at-risk behaviors at schools that are not being addressed, people that work at those schools need only to open their eyes and address problems. We don't need a huge database with all these intrusive questions, which I believe fly in the face of the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment, that is federal law affording rights to parents and minor students regarding surveys that ask questions of a personal nature, asking kids to incriminate themselves, their parents, and their friends on behaviors that are incriminating. I mean, I can read the questions. Have you seen this happening in your home? Have you seen your friends doing these things? Have you done these things? I mean, it's seeking for the kids to incriminate themselves in misdemeanor and felony activity. And I believe that the Protection of Pupil Rights Amendment protects kids from that. And I'm not sure why it's not being observed. But to say that it's voluntary is, I think, at best a misleading statement, because most kids will take it and most parents don't know enough to opt their kids out. Thank you.
Any other comments? Steve?
I have a question. Is the information available? I think the last witness stated that letters sent to the school, letters sent to the teacher, letters sent to the parents, or some communication. I haven't seen the format of that to be able to assess whether I would think that was adequate notice. And I just simply would observe that the title of the survey is sufficiently misleading that a casual reading of what was asked, if it's in fact asked, you mind if your child takes a healthy kid survey? Well, probably not. That's really not what this is, and I think Dr. Scheffel characterized it pretty well. It is self-incrimination. It is almost informing on family members. And I think ask questions that clearly, given the first question, are you 12 years old or older, are age inappropriate. So I would like to see those so-called warning documents, if I could, please.
So, Board, what is your pleasure?
I'd like to just make a comment.
Bring your mic down.
Oh, I'm sorry. And this is personal. I have a personal email, a personal telephone number, and I would really like for the public to know that it is personal. I have an email here in with the department, and I have been hacked a couple of times. And so if you would please send the letters to the department, I would really appreciate it. And I certainly would want to read some of those letters. I really do. I did read many letters from here in the department, but I would appreciate it if you send it through the Department of Education to the Board of Education. Thank you.
Jane.
Just very quickly, thank you to everyone who's here today. And as a longtime educator and an aunt, a great aunt, and lots of friends, children of friends of mine over the many, many years, I want to thank you for paying attention in all regards and contributing to the community efforts that you're all involved in to make things as well. People as well aware of as possible and how they can help. I taught high school for a very long time, and this particular survey was just blooming, came into being, into existence in my early years of high school teaching. I don't remember that any of my students, which ranged from A to Z, as far as economic level, cultural experience, neighborhood, background, friends, whatever. I don't remember ever any one of them expressing anything but appreciation for the chance to say what was on their minds. I sure didn't pick up, I wasn't asking and I wasn't looking one way or the other. I did not pick up any kind of nervous nervous worry about having their identity become known or causing problems within family or other circles. I do remember several of them saying, and I had everywhere from freshmen to seniors in high school, all of them were very astute young adults who knew that this was something that was incredibly important to be out there and to be known. So as an educator and as a family member who cares for a lot of young people and their future, I want to thank you again. And hopefully we can continue this productive, constructive work on behalf of kids right to starting today and carrying forward. Thank you very much.
Angelica?
So this has been a little bit troubling. I want to thank everybody for coming and speaking all the letters. I have to say that in my congressional district, and I have heard from literally one end of my fairly large district to the other, the letters have all reflected the comments that you have made, and none have been otherwise. We take an oath to abide by the Constitution, federal Constitution, state Constitution. We seek to be legal. This has been a little confusing with the informal opinion we've had that perhaps we're not doing it legally. I'm not sure about that, but more importantly to me personally, I think we should take the oath that doctors take, which is to do no harm. In the last 3 months, I think we've done probably some harm here, but at the very least, when I think about it, it's been to confuse the educators and the education community. What we're talking about today is the potential to do harm to children. And that really grieves me. I want to talk just a little bit about what little I know about kids, because I'm not in any way associated with the medical profession. I've heard some very compelling arguments about specific kids' problems, but in general, our adolescents' bodies tend to grow faster than their brains. They're mature sometime during their adolescence. Their brains are mature at about roughly age 25 on average. So when that frontal thingy, that lobe up there, is immature, or whether it's been damaged with traumatic brain injury, what is most appealing, attractive, what's the one thing that adolescents want, is to take risks. You know, we all ask ourselves, how did we live to be in our mid-20s because of some of the stupid things we did? We actually did things that physiologically, unfortunately, were pretty reasonable and appropriate. But it was our parents and our community that saved our lives and that saved us, that kept us whole, that kept us safe. We didn't bear kids, some of us. We didn't become addicted to drugs. And this is the kind of work that you all are doing. I agree with folks that is parental responsibility is the first responsibility. But you know what? It is darn hard to do the job of a parent today all by yourself, given that the kids aren't with us. If we wanted to lock them up at home, that'd be fine. We could be full-time parents. But that's not what happens. And so we really do need the schools and the community to keep our kids safe. So I strongly believe that we should maintain the situation we have right now so that the parents we hear from who are really offended by this have the right to opt their kids out. I agree with Mr. Durham that we need to be very careful in how we inform parents, that they know what this is all about. Beyond that, I do not think that we should have a change. I will say one thing, though, that in my community when I was in the school board, it was not called the Healthy Kids. It was called the Student Risk Behavior Survey. And I guess maybe that might be I have no right to ask anyone to change it, but I think that might really be appropriate. But I want to thank you because you are the people who care about my kids. Thank you.
Yeah. I'd just like to observe that in all these comments today, there have been several comments about how parents, if opting in is required, you won't get the opting in. And yet, on the other hand, we're told that parents need this information. It's a very strange message to me. Parents need the information, but we won't trust parents to give permission for their own children. I'd also like to observe that I think most of the interventions and the programs that we keep hearing about are so reliant upon this data. You don't need the survey data in order to tell kids to practice healthy behavior and avoid risky behavior. They've been doing that for decades in public schools. We didn't fill out a survey to do that. So I just don't understand I'm troubled by the message. Yes, parents need this information, but we don't need to ask parents to buy in.
I'm disturbed.
Madam Chair. George, what is your pleasure? We can talk it to death.
May I ask a question? What is the board's authority on this? Can we that there's a change in opt-in, opt-out? Can the CDE withdraw from participating in the survey, in which case it's given by two other entities? Or what is our...
It's up to us. I thought we were here to do is make a motion to uphold it or to with not to. So I'm kind of waiting for somebody...
Tony, come up.
Tony's going to maybe address it? Very good, Tony.
Madam Chair. The particular legal question with which you are confronted is the interpretation of this statutory language. A school or school district employee who requires participation. Sorry, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. A school or school district employee who requires participation in a survey. My understanding is that there's an interpretation out there. I don't believe we have seen it. That this is, in fact, a voluntary survey, and so the statutory requirements of Section 22-1-123 do not apply because it is a voluntary survey and not a required survey. I don't believe there is any conflict out there with interpreting this to say that if this statute does apply, this statute requires an affirmative opt-in from parents before such a survey could be conducted. The question about whether or not this is a required survey under the facts is, in my opinion, ambiguous. And ambiguous facts surrounding something like this is within the discretion of the agency or board charged with enforcing that law about whether or not under those facts it applies. So ultimately, I believe it is within your discretion to determine whether or not on the facts presented, this is a survey that is being required by a school district or school that has agreed to administer it, or whether under these facts or circumstances it is voluntary. Within that, I think you've heard a great deal of testimony today regarding actions taken out there, and it sounds like there's various differing ones. I too am a little bit confused as to whether or not this is something that is determined on a district-by-district basis or if there are overall guidelines. And it may be useful for this board to see those in arriving at its determination. The other aspect of this, of course, is that these are surveys that are being given in the context of students who are required by law to attend public school, to be in there for a certain number of hours, and they are being administered by school personnel. And I think there are also questions raised, frankly, about the opt-out and whether or not in many cases parents are even seeing the forms or aware. Again, that's a factual question. I'm not sure if we have sufficient facts as to how parents are actually being informed to make that determination.
Tony, if you don't mind, let me give a little background here as to what my understanding is. And Dr. Walk, if I'm wrong, the health department would determine that this year, and it comes out in the fall, every 2 years, as I recall, comes out. So they would determine if they were going to do the survey. They send out the survey questions to the school districts. The school district can make the decision to either participate or not participate. So if the school district makes a choice not to participate, that's fine. If they participated, I get the impression maybe sometimes they were a little lax in this next step, and we want to be sure that they need to send out notice to the parents 2 weeks in advance and tell them about the survey and tell the parents if they want to opt out, they need to let the school district know, let the school know that their children will not participate in the survey. If they don't do that, then you know the rest of the children will participate in the survey.
If they want.
Well, that's what I just said.
Yeah.
So that's just for the purpose of the kind of clearing things up for the audience. That's the way it has been handled. Now, what we're going to talk about here
now,
is
just to complete
that.
The loop, if I would, because the question I believe was, you know, what different options are available. I believe that the board could determine that this is a voluntary survey and therefore that the provisions of Section 22-1-123 do not apply, which I believe would be an end to the matter. You could alternatively, within your discretion, determine that under the circumstances this is a required survey. And therefore that all the provisions of Section 22-1-123, including the requirement of obtaining positive consent or an opt-in from parents, does apply, in which case, you know, it would be up to you on whether or not to issue guidance to the field on that. That would be advisory. One other option that would be available to you is that the Department of Education is one of three agencies that is currently participating in administration of the survey, and I think that would be up to your review and discretion as well.
Thank you, Doug. yes, Pam?
Well, one of my questions is if the board would decide that the Department of Education should not participate in the distribution of this survey, could the other departments go ahead and present this survey to public school children without our participation or without our blessing?
I believe they could. I believe it would then, again, participation by districts is voluntary. This is nothing the Department of Education or the State Board can mandate. So they would be in the position of, again, of getting attempting to get participation from individual school districts.
Tony, would you be kind enough to clarify what you said? I think I heard the words, but I didn't know what they meant, really. When you said that the board can determine that it is voluntary, determine it on the basis of facts, or that we determine, that we decide that this is to be a voluntary survey. Therefore, districts may opt out, parents may opt out, kids may opt out. Is that what you're saying, that it's our decision, or that there's some set of facts that we need to seek before we make any kind of a decision?
It's a little bit of both.
Oh, great.
At this point in time. Starting with the overall framework here, we have a statute out there that says that for surveys that that where a school or district employee requires participation in the survey, there's a variety of parental protections that apply. You could determine whether or not this survey is required and this falls within the scope of this law, or you could determine whether or not this survey is voluntary and therefore does not fall within the scope of this law. You would be doing this in
fact?
Based on fact, I believe.
So yes. That fact would go back to the department that creates the survey.
I'm sorry, I don't know.
You're going to hurt your head, sir. Don't. It's okay. Yeah, I got it. So I'm trying to think about an emotion. Do we need more time to figure out what the facts are today?
I don't think so. If we have got more facts than I need.
Is ultimately up to you as a board to decide whether you have sufficient facts available before you now to make that determination, or if you believe that additional information would be necessary for you to arrive at a decision.
Madam Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, we certainly didn't have enough facts today to determine how parents are perceiving whether or not this survey is voluntary or not based on testimony today. If our decision whether or not we recommend or require opt-in versus opt-out is based on testimony, we certainly need a more formal process to hear from parents and students that take this survey. My question is, if we were to require opt-in, what would the other agencies do? Do they have to also issue some kind of a directive to opt in? I mean, how do we articulate with these other two agencies legally? I have no idea.
Well, my inclination was what I thought we would do, but obviously I never know, was that we would listen to the testimony, and then we would have a motion to do one.
I just, Madam Chair, I don't think we had nearly enough.
No, well, let me finish, please.
Yes.
Obviously, we don't have enough information to make that decision. So it would be my suggestion that we gather more information, take the thing up. I mean, survey's not going to be out till fall. It's not like we've got to do it today. So that's what my inclination would be. This has become, to me, it's, frankly, it's pretty black and white, but obviously not to everybody else. So I suggest we wait till next month and
so moved.
Gather what information we want and make the decision on next month.
So moved.
May I ask and then let Pam speak? What happens with the other agencies? In other words, what force does our decision
can you answer
have?
That?
Well, that's a fact that we could, that's a question. I mean, I think if we move in second to table this, I think we also should bring forward the questions that we have and the concerns we have. How do we assure that parents know that they have the choice, that they know what's going to be on the survey, that they have plenty of time to look at it, et cetera. So if somebody will second my motion to move it.
Second for?
I second.
Thank you. So then, okay. If it's okay with you, Pam.
Been moved and seconded that we wait until next month to and gather further information. We'll let the commissioner and staff know what kind of information we really wanted by next month, and then make that decision next month. So,
guys, do you have questions you want to articulate today?
What process will we use, though, to articulate the information we want?
What?
You know, do we all just write Robert and tell him what we want?
What or information say so right now, want? If there's someone who could be kind enough to write it down. I mean, I think Steve had some specific questions.
Well, thank you. Yeah, specifically, I mean, I'd like to see all of the documentation that leads to what I would characterize as informed consent, keeping in mind my bias that you better change the title if it's going to be informed consent. Because the title is misleading, and I think that's been well demonstrated. So I'd like to at least see the letters that go to everyone and the instructions that are read and exactly what access parents have not only to the letter explaining it, but to the questions themselves.
Okay, any other? Yeah. Yes, Deb.
And I'd like to hear from parents, not parent groups, but individual parents, because I'd like to know whether this survey is perceived by them as actually voluntary or in name only voluntary, because the parents I spoke with had no knowledge of it, would not have given consent, and felt that even though semantically it's voluntary, they don't experience it as voluntary, nor do the students. So we have to look carefully at the experience of how the survey is released and issued and how the students perceive it and the parents perceive it, not just what's on paper.
But also then, how do we change, if in fact they feel that it's not voluntary, what do they need to see or hear that makes sure they understand that this is indeed,
right?
Because that would have been an error, an unintentional error maybe?
And to consider opt-in as well as how it's depicted both to the parents and to the students.
Would you like to call the question?
Can I speak?
I just called on Jane. I don't need your assistance. Jane?
Can I do it now?
Yes.
I just have something to add to the list of things we might look for, if it's available. I think the other two things I've heard are priorities. What has there been discussed in the past? What would be the process for distribution? What's the fate of this survey if the schools are suddenly not a part of that distribution system? I'd also like to know if there's anything in statute related to this. Is there anything in law that created the survey that speaks to grant funding, that outlines the duties of the entities involved, anything at all that's in statutory language or rules somewhere, which leads into the idea of the grant. How does this work through the grants? Do we have that in CDE rule, state board rule, or not? I want those kind of facts. I think a lot of what happens with this is going to depend on the process that we're using and or interrupting. That's all.
Anyone else?
Thank you so much.
Want to call a question?
Aye.
To what? What is exactly are we, how is it phrased?
What?
How is the question phrased?
I'll read.
Thank you.
8 or 9
questions
that are supposed to be addressed.
Okay.
Steve said yes,
and Laura. Dr. Flores.
Yes.
Yes.
Ken Maslin.
Yes.
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 Thank you all very much for your very patient participation.
And your passion.